Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Picard on CBS All Access. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched season one, episode three, titled The End is the Beginning is the End. No, that's something else. I got a question for you right off the bat.
Oh.
They did the previously on, like they always do, and I can't tell where that ends and where the episode begins.
Dude, same.
Because they do like a little bit of a flashback to the Mars thing, and there's big white light, and then we get a caption that says 14 years ago, Starfleet, whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Robot did that a couple times to me last year.
It's cool. I like it. But from a recap perspective, I have no idea where to start.
I think what it does is it serves to, I don't know, I guess it's a smoother reentry from that to the actual episode. And also, instead of saying 14 years ago, they can just show Mars on fire and then Picard wearing a Star Trek fleet uniform and,
Then they made the mistake of saying 14 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was just about to call myself on that. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know. Why can't we just have retired Admiral's log?
Yeah.
Or Admiral, like, I wanted to hear Picard coming in from the commercial breaks with just, that's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
We just need a voiceover saying retired Admiral's log.
Admiral Clancy's log.
Yeah.
The dumbass Picard came in. Old-ass Picard came in again. He's hounding me about this rescue op.
I've quoted three Shakespeare sonnets to no avail. the Talaxian ambassadors prove most recalcitrant to my intellectual proddings. Yeah, I could use that in lieu of the title cards, but, it's new Trek.
It would make it feel more Trekky.
Yeah.
What did you think of this episode?
Okay. I really like this show, and I'm starting to get excited by the things they're doing with it. I do wonder if some of the things I think they're doing with it are what they're actually doing with it.
What do you think? What are you getting excited about?
First of all, the idea that you might have this kamikaze Borg mission to upload some kind of neural virus into the collective to shut down, that's pretty metal. The 25 Romulan special operations forces went and invaded a Borg cube with express purpose of getting assimilated and doing a Jeff Goldblum, Independence Day to them all. I think that's a kind of a cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that they brought the Borg Hugh. If you didn't recognize him, he's the administrator of the Borg Reclamation Project underneath the Romulan Empire. I think that's a super cool idea. I kind of like this weird privateer feel that the crew that he's assembling kind of has. And I also like if they might be doing this thing because the one of the big kind of things that stick in my craw is that Jean-Luc Picard gets denied. The Starfleet calls his bluff and accepts his resignation. Mm-hmm. And then they do nothing about the Romulans. And for 14 years, he goes back to his estate and tries to live this comfortable life and forget about it. Leaving, this Lieutenant Commander Raffi to just twist in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really poignant emotional situation. It doesn't seem like it's something Picard would do, but maybe they're trying to get at what they're trying to get at is some kind of like class consciousness thing where like Raffi is like to represent to every person and Jean-Luc represents like maybe an upper middle class or, upper class sensibility that might have gotten offended by some minor thing with politics and just takes their ball and goes home. And then the two sides drift further and further apart. Like, it's never too late for a guy like Picard to start giving a shit again, I guess. Like, if you're a disaffected.
Sure,
And like, maybe they're going with that kind of thing. Like, hey, get back. It's never too late for, people that have been disillusioned by the process to get back in the game. Because, maybe this new threat is something like we've never faced before.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. But they might just be like, the Star Trek movie happened 14 years ago, and that's when the Romulans died. And, now we're in 2020, so we're just going to have Picard sulk, and we don't have any underlying reason for that. I don't know. Because,
definitely disillusioned.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, he says this is not Starfleet, right? This is not the Starfleet that I know.
Sure. Sure. But I think one thing is cooler than the other because like the fact that he keeps referring to this interview as an unmitigated disaster,
mm-hmm.
I just wish he'd own it. Like he's righteously angry at the Federation. He's one of their greatest heroes. He could have done a lot like bashing him from the outside and he just didn't.
Yeah. And I think Raffi is going to be on this trip to serve as an endpoint to that discussion, right? Like, it's going to have to come up in close quarters, space travel, I would think.
But I guess it's this point where I kind of want to talk to the Star Trek fans and audience and say that this is the type of podcast that I like. I really love the show, but this show sometimes does some really stupid things, and I'm going to have to laugh at it. I'm just going to. Like, you know, Star Trek has always done, like, and I'm not saying that Picard's done something as stupid as, like, I don't know, have the Enterprise show up over an African warlord planet and have the leader take one look at the blonde, blue-eyed woman and say he has to have her as his wife. And he's going to make him her fight with his other wife in single combat to resolve. Like, that's bad. Picard's never, like, so far that bad.
No.
But it does do, you know, it does do some stupid shit.
Does some silly stuff.
Like I love Data. My first introduction with Data was him whistling on the holodeck, and this android, who can later perfectly replicate complicated dance moves, can't figure out how to whistle.
Yeah.
He can't figure out how to whistle.
He asks, like, Riker, like, how he does it or whatever.
Yeah, like, he's doing this very poor pop because of Weasel, and then seconds later, he sprints over like a maniac and rips some nerd out of a hollow river and holds them aloft, like... That's bad. The Picard's not doing anything this bad, but they also had a woman refer to Jean-Luc Picard as JL.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. It took me so out of the Star Trek moment I was in.
She could have ripped a fart, and it would have been slightly less of a what situation for that.
There's just so much baggage that comes with a nickname for Picard, especially.
Yeah. Like when Sean Connery came onto the set of Indiana Jones, calling Indiana Jones Jr., it's jarring, but that's his dad. You're supposed to get, like...
Right. There's a power dynamic there.
How does the Jean-Luc Picard that I know from Star Trek go from, hey, you know what, I might play poker with my trusted command crew from time to time, to some lieutenant commander calling Admiral Picard... JL. Hey, JL.
It's shocking to me because in seven seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation, with all those episodes that I've been through with Riker and Troy and Data and Wesley,
Vosh,
like,
Vosh doesn't have the temerity to call him JL.
Nobody calls him anything other than Captain or Jean-Luc.
Plus,
like, Beverly's, I think, the only one who calls him Jean-Luc repeatedly. Like,
and JL is harder to say than Jean-Luc. Someone on Twitter said that, like, it's that they're amazed that they had the restraint not to call him J-Lou.
J-Lo.
Come on, J-Lou.
Let's call him J-Lo. Yeah.
Come on, J-Lou.
They don't know who J-Lo is anymore.
Smoke some snake leaf with me, J-Lou. I got some real hissy issy here for us
to
try.
Yeah, so they got so much background. Jesus. Yeah, maybe she was on snake leaf when she came up with that nickname.
That's right.
And she didn't realize how much Picard hated it.
They kind of made it a point that she's an old school snake leaf aficionado.
Because
back in their Starfleet days, she said some things never change.
She's a forked tongue for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. That thing
a
that just eats the front of your tongue and gives you the characteristic snake leaf tongue.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they have a lot of backstory that they're going to have to fill in for me to even come close to believing she would call him that.
That's right.
We'll see if they do it. They're going to be on a ship for a while, so expect more of it, I guess.
What'd you think of it, JJ?
Good question, Ray?
Jimmy J? What'd you think?
I liked it. It took me a couple watches to really get what they were doing with, like, the Romulans and the Borg and... The XBs.
Oh, yeah, when, like, Sophie starts in or Soji starts in on that, like, I'm like, did I miss an episode? What the fuck?
Yeah, there's all this Romulan mythology, but they don't want to call it mythology. At least the former Romulans, now former Borg, don't want to call it that. It's interesting. I'm trying to determine if I think there's any time travel stuff, like actual time travel in here, because they keep talking about, like, we met tomorrow, and, like, there's, I don't know if it's a mythology thing, like, oh, I know who you are because you're this archetype, which they mention, or I know who you are because I've seen the future, you're the end of all, right? Like, they keep saying it's,
I
think it's more of a prophecy. Yeah. I think it's more of a mythology thing.
Yeah, is it like a Bajoran wormhole type of prophecy, or is it like, I've been through an actual wormhole and seen the future type prophecy?
Yeah, and it's certainly not out of the realm of especially a Borg story, right?
Yeah, time travel,
like,
for sure.
That's been done before, so I wouldn't put it past him. I'm just not sure yet, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think the relationship between some of the Romulans, like Narek and Rizzo and Soji. Like, that stuff is playing the worst to me, I guess. It's not bad. It's just...
I don't mind Narek
right
and
now
Soji.
It's so shallow.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm coming there to tell you that you're doing a bad job. And then
yes.
she gets there and tells him he's doing a bad job.
Yes.
He says, I'm subtle.
Uh-huh.
And they keep going with the plan. I'm like...
Like I said,
it's okay.
Soji and Narek's all right, but it's the Narek and his sister. It's like, what are they trying to do? Some kind of low rent Lannister bullshit here? Like, it's
very low rent.
You smell like sex, you know, or something like.
Yeah,
that's a line someone wrote.
Carnal
written.
Or whatever. I don't know. Whatever she
smells
calls
so
it.
Carnal.
Yeah,
it's my new scent, Carnal,
mm-hmm.
by Romulus.
But yeah, I don't know. I mostly like it.
Yeah,
I don't think it's bad, and I like Rios. I think he's going to be a cool character.
Yeah, it's like a fun Star Trek. As long as it gets the big stuff mostly right,
yeah.
I'll be content to clown it like I do all the stuff I love. Mm-hmm. But you know, they got to keep doing the big stuff right.
So a lot to clown.
I don't
Star
mind
Trek.
The bizarre, because like a lot of times in the first season, Star Trek's just throwing a bunch of bizarre, weird shit to see what sticks. Like, here's a guy who sleeps in a, he turns into goo and sleeps in a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a Pinocchio that thinks he's a real boy. Here's a man who's got copper blood and weird ears. Look at him. Every 7 years, he gets uncontrollable horny.
Copper like, blood?
Yeah, Spock. He got copper blood.
Has copper blood?
Copper-based blood, yeah.
What does that mean? He's got green blood?
Yeah.
Is that why? It just
green-blooded Vulcan?
Oxidizes?
How many times has McCoy called him that?
Is it orange? Like an orangey
it's,
copper
it's
color when
orange.
It's in his veins?
It's green. Like an
no,
ox-
when it's in his veins. Like
oh, yeah, you're probably
like it
right.
It oxidizes when it comes
you're
out.
You're probably right. It probably runs, and then when it gets exposed to air, it turns just to cigar blood. It goes right. Our blood is like all bluish right. purple, and then turns red when exposed to air.
That's what I hear. But there's no way to test that.
Unless you cut someone open, Jim.
But then the blood turns red.
Oh, yeah, then, yeah.
As soon as you see it, yeah, it's impossible. All
I
right.
I think that's how the movie Saw started. That guy just wanted to see if it's, you know.
I know you've got blue blood.
Yeah,
don't
see
lie
the blue,
to me.
I want to see the blue blood. Strap you into his device. Saw, crack you open.
We got to get started talking about Star Trek here. Otherwise, we'll be here forever. All right, let's start the recap. I think it starts with Starfleet at headquarters 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Picard tried to convince the Starfleet commanders to continue the rescue op, but they refuse. Picard explains why to Raffi. He gave them an ultimatum to accept his plan or he can resign, and they did not accept his plan. And then Raffi suggests that they try to continue the rescue op themselves. Picard thinks that's stupid, and Raffi gets called by the commander-in-chief, and she thinks she's going to get fired and blames Picard.
I heard that, I read this, there's like some out-of-universe material that Patrick Stewart was talking about in an interview where the Committee of Admirals was hearing his case, just kept on snickering and calling him JL.
Yeah.
Oh,
couldn't
oh,
take
yeah.
him seriously after
oh,
that.
Oh, you think you got that many ships, JL? Okay,
yeah.
All right. Oh, yo, you want to...
yeah, whatever, JL.
you want to bring the synths back online? Okay, all right. Okay, JL. We'll accept your resignation. They fired him like 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. His severance package was just a pound of snake leaf.
Yeah. That's the new basic. That's like, you don't...
The credit, yeah.
They don't have salaries anymore. You just get paid in snake leaf.
Mm-hmm.
I want to like Raffi, and I think she's a cool character, and it's kind of like I wonder. We'll see as we go along. I think they're going for like a Carrie from Homeland type of vibe, where you've got this troubled like intelligence agent who can see things that no one else can because I don't know, she smokes a lot of snake leaf and drinks a lot of Chateau Picard. Maybe she's got some addiction issue. Maybe she wants to waste her life at a gambling pleasure planet.
Yeah,
they're going for that vibe, and I'm kind of there for it. But they need to let this JL stuff go.
They're not going to. Brace yourself.
It's like Neelix had like this super hot star child bride in the first season of Voyager, and they got halfway through and they realized we can't keep this going, and she died. She died.
Wow.
JL needs to die. Not the person, the nickname.
The nickname.
If this gets into season two, they got to leave JL in the season one books.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably a better alternative than what I was hoping for, which is enough backstory to fill this in, because I don't think you can do it. I really don't. Picard is not that kind of guy.
No, like no amounts of after hours drinking or being stranded behind Romulan lines or whatever they're going to do is going to allow him to, I mean...
I wouldn't think so.
Like, I wish they played it, like, if they'd have played it with him being annoyed with her, like, that I would have, like, you kind of like Indiana Jones, not like him being called Junior, all right? Like, I could have rolled with that. because like I could see someone having the temerity and the familiarity with him to do that as kind of like a joke or a jab at him.
Yeah.
But Picard just like not even blinking. I don't know. Don't like it. Don't like Captain JL.
They gave me an answer to one of the big questions I had about the synthetics. What happened to the ones that didn't attack Mars? Apparently they just committed genocide. They dismantled all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of shocking to me. Like, and it sort of, it makes me understand why Picard is saying this is not the Starfleet that I remember.
That's what we talk about this last week, about how, yeah, did they do that with some kind of due process? Because Data
sound like it.
Was found as kind of like a citizen of the Federation, protected by Federation rights. Now,
yeah.
You know, dismantling our synthetic is, could that arguably be the same as like putting like a convicted criminal in stasis or something for some kind of treatment? Because it's not like, I imagine you could put them back together and they'd be right as rain.
Yeah, but, you're probably right.
But still.
So maybe it's just like.
Did they do that through due process?
Maybe it's incarcerating an entire species of beings.
Yeah, indefinitely in some kind of state of non-being.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of some altered carbon shit. But yeah, like, what was the process like for that? I don't know.
I don't know. And I imagine you'd probably have a lot of them that would just scatter as opposed to being dismantled. So maybe if we're talking about a nest, there doesn't necessarily have to be a whole bunch of other Sojis or Dodges out there. It could be like a nest of escaped sort of fugitive synthetics who may have no relationship whatsoever to Soji.
That would be kind of cool. Like a couple thousand of like escaped synthetics on the Lamb and some asteroid somewhere waiting to be led.
Yeah, maybe Bruce Maddox, you know, call them all in somehow.
A little bit of Will Smith iRobot there. Gonna have Soji show up to like a bunch of storage compartments full of B4s or whatever, stumbling out into the light.
Yeah, and they're all smiling at her. Ugh. Creepy.
Crucially, I like how Rafi suggests that this might be a Tal Shiar instigated attack on Picard. Just like I said last week, like, why the fuck would this Romulan Secret Service doom all of Romulans to death by supernova?
Yeah.
Still a great question, and I think they're hinting at this destroyer thing. I think they're hinting at like why this hardliner Romulans might feel that way. Like it's worth sacrificing 99% of us if we can save the 1% of true organic Romulans, you know?
Yeah, could be. It's also possible that maybe the Borg are more involved than we think at this point.
Yeah, could be.
They're sort of pushing around the edges of that story. But we'll get there. So we go back to the present day at Vasquez Rocks, where Picard has explained the situation to Rafi and asks her to help. She's still pissed about him ending her career and also that she never heard from him in the interim.
This is incredible.
Yeah, what's incredible? Snake Leaf?
Rafi, I call you every week, but you're high as fuck and you never remember.
Right.
Like the Jean-Luc Picard would have this woman that he led this like crusade against Starfleet with, got her fired, and then never ever followed up with her. That really puts Picard in a dark place, and I feel like I don't know how you come correct on that, like how you can excuse being so disillusioned that you retreat into your cave of extreme privilege for 14 years and never speak of it again. You know, you never do in interviews, like your books must be so tapioca that they don't ruffle any Federation feathers. It's like Picard's a broken man.
The scary part about this, though, is I feel like they've already told that part of the story and they haven't done it with enough weight for me to really feel like Picard was a broken man at that point.
Well, I wonder if we'll keep seeing flashbacks, though, because like if they leave it like this, then this is, I don't know how.
But where is
the
further setback? Because the setback has been like he played his ultimatum card.
Yeah.
And they call this bluff.
Right.
I mean, now he just has to go off and sulk. So, I mean, maybe he spirals downward. Maybe he thinks about it more. Maybe he...
Yeah, but like I'd like to see...
Talks with his old crew or something. Like
how did he get involved with these two Romulan ex-Tal Shiar operatives? Yeah. Like, is there... What? And maybe from his perspective, maybe there's something more to his story. Like, maybe... I don't know. Maybe there's a misunderstanding with him and Rafi, but it just seems like...
There's got to be more.
This seems crazy that he would never have even... It'd be one thing if she's like, oh, sure, you called, you kept in touch, but, you know, you didn't really do... The fact that he just ghosted her for 14 years is incredible. And it belies like a real kind of metaphysical sickness that he was going through.
Yeah.
And that's... But I don't know. Again, it could be that they think that they told the story and it's all done. And in that case,
I certainly hope not.
In that case, it's never going to be better than like an Anakin Obi-Wan, where yeah. It's like, hey, they were best friends and buddies and brothers, but we really are never going to see it. You just have to believe it. Mm-hmm. Which, fine, I'm willing to accept that. I just hope they fill it in a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it could be really good if they do. The idea that Picard has made some mistakes in his life, he's hurt people, like,
yeah.
I like that because yeah. Picard was always shown as, you know, someone insanely empathetic and compassionate and always did the right thing.
Righteous, yeah.
Yeah, and to see him sort of make a mistake
yeah.
that he lets go for 14 years without trying to repair that mistake is... I think it could be fascinating.
Yeah.
And a great look at a new kind of Picard.
Life is full of people who get, you know, were firebrands about something. You know, you look at the baby boomer generation. You know, that was the generation of Woodstock and Vietnam mm-hmm. protests. But they were also the generation of Wall Street greed and, you know, corporate collusion. And is it, you know, like, is it ever too late to get back in the game? Is it ever too late to, like, have a sense of moral outrage about something? Like, maybe Picard is trying to say something about... what it's like to be from that perspective, and like this is a class kind of this is like a class reconnection. It's a generational reconnection between him and Rafi, and that could be interesting. But then again, it could be that they just think they've done their homework and they're done and they're ready to tell the story. Which
yeah, I mean the hilarious part is she doesn't know this, but he's really here because of Data. Like that's right. The whole genesis for this trip right. is that Data's daughter effectively uh-huh. showed up on his doorstep. So uh-huh. yeah, I mean like
his and she's the most important thing to him. His brother is luggage. His brother is luggage over at the Daystrom uh-huh. Institute, but you know, he right. didn't get his hand held.
It's true.
He didn't get the I'll never leave you pledge.
Okay, we go over to the artifact, the Borg cube. Where Soji gets noticed for speaking to a quote-unquote nameless in its own language. And she's granted an interview with Ramda, which sounds good to her. I don't know anything about Ramda at this point, so I'm not excited. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what's going to happen? We find out that Ramda is an expert on ancient Romulan myth. And she wants to sort of connect with her via some shared framework of mythology.
It's going
to
be Snake Leaf. It's just going to be a snake leaf hookah.
That's, yeah.
And that's what you they're going to figure it all out.
Go in there with a vape pen and.
Want to know what kind of sister I am? Smoke this.
But then we come back to Picard apologizing to Rafi for.
Oh,
his...
wait. Before we do this, I just want to point out that I know we did an intro, but this ex Borg, who's the administrator of the Reclamation Project, is Jonathan Del Arco, and he's the original actor who played Hugh mm-hmm. in the famous Next Generation episode, I-Borg.
Yep.
He was the Federation's first, Borg personality, the first one that got like disconnected from the collective and was yeah. able to reestablish himself as an individual. It's a great episode, and I thought it was a really cool touch that he, as the first independent Borg or reclaimed Borg, is now appointed as administrator over this project. I think that's a cool touch. It's also pretty cool. It's surprisingly cool of the Romulans too,
and Voyager in the formulation phase of their entire plot. Uh-huh. For their multi-season arc said never once said TNG did it.
Yeah.
They just barrel right through and did right. 7 or 9.
Right. They might was there an explanation for that? Like did Janeway take off like midway like in the chronology like midway through Man. Star Trek's
Voyager.
The Next Generation's run?
I know a fair bit about TNG. I know less about Deep Space Nine and almost nothing about anything.
Yeah. Like post season, like right around 7 or 9 showed up is where I checked out of Voyager.
I know she had a hard time adjusting to being a human again.
She did. Might see her later this season if the trailers are to be believed.
You might. Okay, then we go to Picard apologizing to Rafi for his mistakes, and he tries again to sell her on why she should help him, and she asks him to leave, but when he does leave, she feels bad. And offers him a pilot named Rios, who we'll find out, has a ship, because a pilot doesn't do you much good without a ship.
True. He's very real Han Solo here.
Yeah. She also says some stuff about, like, I know for sure that a Starfleet official allowed the attacks on Mars to happen. I think that's in this scene, or maybe the scene
it is
earlier on. So she's been doing research on, you know, what went down on the Mars attacks years ago in the ensuing time.
Also, since I already took Picard to task, I will also say something about Miss Jael here. Maybe get in touch with Picard as you uncover this evidence.
Yeah.
And you do this careful work, you know, like, it's the I'm sure those communicators work two ways, right?
Yeah, but she was probably like, oh, fuck this guy. You know, he's just giving up.
Well, I mean, then it's they're opposite sides of the same fuck yeah. this situation coin.
Yeah, she's a little more justified. I get why she's mad. For sure. Like, he got her fired.
Yeah.
Her whole career went down the shitter, and now she's just smoking. She's a snake leaf burnout.
If I have to jump into someone's foxhole, it's going to be Rafi. Although, yeah. Like, if she keeps his JL stuff up, I might pull a Switzerland and just go full neutral. But I do think, though, that, like, she seems like she had a lot of stuff figured out. And when Picard first mentioned there, like, the day he got resigned and she got fired, it seemed much more conspiracy theory. Like, this is just my hunch. Yeah. And then she solidified that, but also never reached out to him to be like, hey, look, I solidified this.
It seems like she doesn't quite have the missing piece that she needs, which she gets later in this episode.
But, like, you know, at this point, 14 years later, as Picard points out, you've got Romulan secret forces, special operation forces moving on in impunity on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, like, Federation's got its problems, but, like, if you can't detect Romulans sneaking around the capital, the throne world of the Federation, then what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that's pretty cool. And I do like her kind of somewhat drunken, snake-leaf-addled genius, like, Carrie from Homeland thing they're doing. Like, I would have loved to have seen the 24th century equivalent of, like, a red yarn board. I mean, I guess that's like all the different touchscreens she's got.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like cool. They're setting up a more modern crew here. I think like Star Trek The Next Generation was a fairly bland crew. Like there wasn't much that stuck out about any one person except for maybe Riker.
No,
was the ladies' man, right? He's like got the flair.
Yeah, it was a ship full of essentially NPR radio hosts, and you had the Klingon, and you had the guy who liked to fuck.
Right.
And then everybody else was just kind of like, you know, a guest star in Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, pretty much. So they're doing a pretty good job of making all these people, which I like.
Yeah.
Like, I'm taking a shine to Rios and Rafi.
They're making Rios into a lot of people, it turns out.
And they really are. We'll get there. We first, speaking of sneaky Romulans, Commodore O stops by the Daystrom Institute to ask Jurati what went on during her visits with Picard. And it's a very short scene.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Commodore O in these fucking sunglasses and these ears is like a Blues Brother version of Mr. Tumnus from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Who the fuck let her walk on the stage looking like this?
They probably told her to look like this.
Vulcan ears don't go out the side like a...
Do they need like Geordi
style
visors?
She looks like she's ready to work as a teller at Gringotts, man, and Harry Potter. The sunglasses, already the sunglasses are kind of like, I get it. I get it. She's like this government spook character. But the ears pulled out, coming out the
side?
She
needed a fedora. She really just, if
oh,
she had...
Oh, man. A trench coat?
Yeah, a trench coat and a fedora.
Like, it's... you like
put it over the top.
Did people not just laugh out loud when she came out of the makeup trailer? It's like they forget that
probably
they forgot the. It's not your fault. They forgot to glue your ears to the back of your head. They're just flopping out in the breeze, man.
They really are.
Go back there and you tell that makeup person more Spock, less Yoda, because these ears are out of control. And what the have you ever seen a person wear sunglasses in Star Trek, in the history of Star Trek?
I can't recall it.
So the first time you see sunglasses, they're wearing there's some Vulcan with donkey ears. Come on, it's not a good.
They're getting bigger too. Every scene there.
I think is that a joke that they're trying to make the ears 15% bigger every single time you see her.
And I mean, that's the thing. Star Trek kind of didn't mind making their characters look ridiculous from time to time.
No, that's right. Like there's a couple of those like third and fourth season where I swear to God they just took pancake batter and they just threw it on someone's face.
Well, yeah, I mean the alien makeup could get pretty bad sometimes.
Well, that's what this is.
I mean, the hero characters.
Yeah, yeah.
They make them look foolish all the time.
That's true. That's true. The wardrobes alone. I mean, Picard's metal bikini.
I mean, I just watched the one with Vash where he goes to...
That's what I'm saying. Those hot pants. Ryza
and like, well, I mean, yeah, aside from him wearing Speedo, sequin Speedo.
He's wearing an asymmetric blouse and metal hot pants.
He's
it's
also
amazing.
Carrying this Horgon, I think.
Yeah.
This idol that Riker gave him so that he would get fucked when he goes to Ryza.
Yeah, the guy who likes to fuck gave him a statue that says, I like to fuck. It's a
and
brilliant
then
plot.
He comes back and everybody's like, oh, you enjoy yourself on Ryza?
That's an amazing episode, right?
It's fantastic.
That's one of the most entertaining episodes in all of TNG history.
Oh, it's great.
It's great. Like Picard punches a Ferengi for talking shit.
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing episode. Commodore O's ears, not amazing. That's what I'm saying.
I agree. They were a little silly. All right. We go back to the artifact. Soji is taken to speak with Rhonda, who is mentally disturbed. This is kind of it. They just go inside and then it cuts.
Yeah, it's another one. I feel like there's a scene cut because, although this could also just be our early preview of Soji just knowing things, but like, they started referring to all this stuff like these disturbed as did disordered, and they've already talked about the nameless, which last episode I thought, oh, well, that kind of makes sense because you got all these aliens that from the Gamma Quadrant, and you don't know who they are, they're just a nameless, but they're Romulans, and she's speaking to them in Romulan language. Why are they calling him the nameless again? Can you just give him a name?
It's a good question. And she knows a lot about her assimilation, right?
Like, yeah.
She knows what ship she was on.
I mean, Hugh's got a name. Goddamn.
Uh-huh.
It's not, they don't go around calling him 3 of 5 or nameless anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. This class of, I guess, disconnected XBs was interesting to me because they call them the disordered. They clearly are mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
And it's all seemed to revolve. Well, we'll talk about it in subsequent scenes, but it all seemed to revolve around the disconnection of the ship from the collective.
Right. Right.
And
the connection they have.
We don't really know what happened. That's what we're trying to get at. But like, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of fun watching them play like Romulan Rubik's cubes and playing Romulan Mahjong.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Anytime there's like a sci-fi take on an old classic.
What does a Romulan fidget spinner look like?
I don't know.
It's got 3 points,
it's
right?
It's got enormous shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Even there's fidget spinner. When did shoulder pads fall out of favor with the Romulans? I really liked, we didn't talk about this, but I really liked those new Starfleet uniforms. I think they really... they really did a nice job between going back to the old militarized, like, classic Trek movies where these look like, you know, military uniforms and, like, the Next Generation's pajamas. I thought they're, like, the, one of the tastiest Starfleet uniforms I've ever seen.
See, I never notice uniform changes. Really? I never notice it. Except in First Contact, yeah.
You didn't notice the Romulans not looking like front doors anymore?
No,
like their fake
even
front
though
doors?
I remember seeing, like... 3 days ago or something, I watched a couple of Romulan episodes, and I was like, God damn, those shoulder pads are fucking ridiculous.
They
didn't notice it in this.
They wear outfits made of Brillo pads that have massive shoulder pads.
Yeah.
How they fit through doors, I don't know.
They make them bigger.
That's what maybe that
Romulan doors are just bigger.
Those aren't ornamental, decorative, fake front doors. Those are actually just Romulan Tal Shiar agents standing in front of every house on Romulus. They look like aluminum doors.
It seemed like
doors.
A lot of work to me. A lot of trouble to go to devise a ruse that works once and not on the people who live on the planet. Like Romulans know, right? You don't go to the front door.
It's like a cultural thing, right? It's almost like they're, I kind of like that where they take, you know, because obviously these are barely veiled archetypes for like different world powers at the time, you know, like the Klingons are kind of the Russians and the Romulans are kind of think you're supposed to understand them being as like Chinese or something. But like when they start building out, it's like, okay, what are the Romulans? They're paranoid spy people. Okay, well, what's a paranoid spy culture look like? It's almost like a ritual kind of thing. Like, yeah, everyone knows it's bullshit, but it's like it's so ingrained in their culture that they have a secret entrance to their house, and that's where their friends and family go to. It's like I kind of like it.
Traditional Romulan houses, so like it's like I imagine
people
they don't do it anymore.
Yeah, like people have like the horseshoes over their doors. Mm-hmm. Like no one really believes in that shit anymore, do they? But it's traditional at this point. So I think that's kind of neat, you know?
Adds
like they take this racial essentialism and then start fleshing it out.
Yeah.
It's better than the shoulder pads.
Easily. Although the shoulder pads camouflage your shoulders. That's who knows
true.
How strong this person is?
Damn straight.
He could have shoulders
like a fucking NFL linebacker.
Or he could have shoulders like Pee Wee Herman, and you'd never know.
That's right. Always hide your strength and your weakness.
Are you willing to gamble? Come at me.
Rafi is.
All right. So Picard calls Rafi in the middle of her research to send her the Daystrom data on Bruce Maddox. There's this, they do a good job of packing in a relationship, a backstory to their relationship in this scene, right? Like there's nothing happening here, but there's a familiarity between the characters.
Yeah. Like I know you've got this mystery and you got your jaws around like a pit bull.
And you're going to protest when I call and tell you I got this stuff for you, but then it's going to intrigue you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm kind of like this demanding father figure that you don't want to let down, even though I've let you down for 14 years. Like there is that works a little bit. Yeah. get rid of the jail stuff. You're almost there.
I think so. And then Picard meets with Rios, who is injured. We don't know what from, but his EMH patches him up while he and Picard talk about the mission. And Picard tries to figure out what makes Rios tick.
You and me both, buddy.
It's the tragic sense of life by Unamuno is what I'm going to call him.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish philosopher.
What do you think of Captain Rios' ship? Because this is going to be the ship of the series, it seems.
I'm getting like a Mass Effect Normandy type vibe.
I was going with a giant version of the jump ships from Destiny.
Okay.
Like this looks literally like a new monarchy faction reward for getting like 500 kills in a Crucible in season 2 or something. Yeah. Like it looks so much like that, it hurts. But
I keep expecting Seth Green to show up in a wheelchair or something.
But Captain Rios, I mean, he's kind of like along the same wavelength as like Hector from Westworld or like Pedro Pascal from Game of Thrones or The Mandalorian. He's kind of like this cool, but in a very kind of like, you know, either South American or Spanish type. And he's got that cool kind of like maybe he's got a little Han Solo criminality. He used to be this upright Starfleet officer, but Starfleet did him dirty and did his captain dirty. And I like all that.
Yeah.
But these emergency holograph programs...
kind of ridiculous.
Like, is half the crew going to be just versions of him in different outfits and speaking different... Because I looked at the background of this actor, and he was, like, born in Venezuela. His dad was a diplomat, and he spent most of his time growing up in England, which might explain his facility with, like, Irish and English accents. But yeah, like, but are they really going to have, like, are we going to have the emergency engineering hologram and he's going to have, like, a Scottish accent and he's going to be wearing, like, a kilt and a beret?
It seems like they're wearing the same uniform, right?
Are they?
I thought they were, but maybe they're not.
So let me ask you this. The original emergency medical holograph looked like the guy,
Robert Picardo.
Looked like the guy who designed him in Starfleet, which makes sense.
Yes.
Kind of like the same way that Data roughly looks like Dr. Soon. If you're building something, a lot of times it makes you look like yourself. The Mona Lisa kind of looks like Leonardo da Vinci. You've got this kind of like, but this guy didn't design or develop these programs. I'm assuming he just bought them off the shelf. Like, I don't think that he built this starship by hand. I don't think. He just probably bought them off the shelf. Why the hell do they all look like him except for different accents? Like, it seems like a bizarre ego trip thing to do, to have all of your fake crew look and sound like you only with different accents. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I don't think I would want that. But you know, Rios is a complicated guy, apparently.
It's like it's also like this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like all of his holograms are like these mannered and kind of called, and he's the one that's kind of loose cannon, just like, just pull his fucking hunk of metal and I'm just gonna bleed on my shirt because I want you to do a half-assed job of fixing me up, doc. Like,
and then one of them starstruck by Picard and he's pretending that he's not,
even though he clearly obviously is, because he's running his ship shipshape and Federation standard, whatever the hell.
Oh yeah,
that
it was
means.
A mess before he realized Picard was showing.
Oh
up.
Yeah, oh yeah, you know that's why he got the shrapnel in his arm. He tried to stuff his locker with all the junk and it exploded on him.
Oh, you know what you could do?
Then he's beamed it all out to space. That's the other plan.
I bet you nobody has to reorganize their house in the Star Trek future. If you had a transporter, couldn't you just transport every item into its individual place all at once?
Or you could just like just turn it all into its molecular goop and then reconstitute it any way you want. Like just completely rearrange and redecorate it. The push of a button. This is the emergency podcast hologram, and he just talks like this. He looks just like me, but when the podcast goes wrong, he just starts pushing the button.
The Canadian version.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell that was, but it's a valid character, so don't say anything about it.
A little hint as to who Rios might be.
Uh-huh.
This Tragic Sense of Life book that Picard picks up is by a Spanish philosopher named Unamuno. Forgive my disgusting American tongue.
Yeah.
It's an existential philosophical writing. I don't know much more about it than that because it's long. It's longer than I could read in a day or a weekend or whatever.
Right.
But you know, existentialism is sort of the idea that we ascribe our own meaning to life, and it has no intrinsic meaning. So you kind of get the idea that this guy is going to be, just sort of do things the way he wants to do them.
This is the writer's room saying that he's complicated.
Yeah.
He's got layers. Mm-hmm. He's got stuff going on.
Yeah, and he might not even know, because I know one of the things I learned about this Unamuno guy is that he sort of had a religious crisis around the time that he switched over to existential thinking.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they're setting something similar up with Rios, with his old captain dying.
Now they got someone with a snake leaf hookup coming onto the ship, so that's going to kick the philosophical talks in overdrive.
Insufferable.
Can I get a scene with all three versions of Captain Rios, Rafi, Agnes, and Picard just passing the pipe around? Like in lieu of a poker scene, I just want to see them kind of like, you know, getting deep.
This is going to be real interesting when they have to debate the ethics of one of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you remember they always went into the conference room and they'd have, like, Geordi and Deanna and Beverly and everybody sitting down debating what their next move should be.
Sure, yeah.
And then Picard would decide.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an entirely different game here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're and gonna, I can't wait to see
it. They got a hot box the conference room.
For sure. All right.
We're receiving subspace frequencies, Captain. Some sitar music's playing in the background. I'm here for it. They replace all the doors in the ship with beads.
Nice. So Rafi continues her research and finds something on a thing called Free Cloud, which I think is either some sort of gambling website or a casino, or maybe Quark's running it. Maybe Free Cloud is what Quark did after Deep Space
Nine.
That
would be cool.
Yeah.
I would love to see him of like he's bought a whole planet and he's running it like Quark's bar.
Is Armin Shimmerman still alive?
Surely.
He's got to be, right?
Yeah. Nog's not, but I think the other, I don't know. I think I would have paid, I think I would have heard if he'd have passed on.
Probably.
But that'd be cool.
It'd be great to see him.
No, I got, it sounds like a 21st century photo sharing app. Uh-huh. But I think you're supposed to understand that it's, like one of those seedy type of pleasure gambling planets.
Yeah. You know? It's like Sealand, right? It's like the international waters,
right.
Free for all.
You can
gambling.
Buy actual Romulan ale here, not the synthesized stuff, the stuff that's still illegal on the black market. Right.
Right.
Get all your snake leaf, your Romulan ale.
Who do you think is going to do
death
it better?
Sticks, whatever.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
It's going to do what better?
The casino scene.
Probably Star Wars because they have a bigger budget. And the Casino Planet's problem wasn't that it didn't look amazing. It didn't look like an amazing, awesome Las Vegas world. It was a lot of other things.
Although I have seen a casino episode in Next Generation.
Mm.
It was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. It's one where they get stuck in an alternate dimension in a novel, essentially.
And they have to keep going through the revolving doors. And
eventually buy the casino out from under the foreign investors. Yeah, it's...
Yep.
That's a bad episode.
Yeah, like a 21st century astronaut got stuck in that. Yeah, there's a big skeleton in a spacesuit.
Yep.
I remember that episode.
It's real weird.
Picard's not doing anything like that.
I hope not.
Got to give it credit for that.
So, in private, Rios EMH fawns over Jean-Luc's presence and insists that Rios is too, even though he protests. Rios says he doesn't want to get involved because the last time he did, 10 years ago, he got essentially his hero killed.
Mm-hmm.
This very famous captain,
Captain not appearing in this episode.
Yeah, Captain Nameless, former Borg.
I do like the relationship they're building between Picard and him. Like, you know, Picard's in here and he's kicking back into the console. Like, we might get up to some pretty bad stuff out here. Some things that you wouldn't want to tell a lawyer about. You know, like we might have to cut some corners, break some rules. Like, mm-hmm. Picard, come on. At your sneakiest, you're running around telling Starfleet about all your plans.
Yeah, and then defying them.
He's like it's Starfleet requires 8 hours of pilot sleep. You'll have to manage with 7 with a 30-minute nap in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Are you prepared to work under these constraints, Captain Rios? Like, what is Picard breaking the rules look like? I can't wait.
I think it's exactly that.
Yeah, he's just gonna go renegade, wipe his ass with the Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. I'm in for it.
He's done that a time or two, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's no stranger to wiping his ass.
He switched to Earl Grey decaf. He's wild.
Crazy.
He's wild.
He drinks it cold now.
Oh my God.
All right.
Out of a styrofoam cup.
Why would you?
He's got
gone
wild. He's got an edge. He's got an edge, Jim.
Probably
he's breaking all the rules.
All right. Picard's back in his vineyard. He's looking over his grapes, and he confesses that he's never truly felt at home here because he's a star man, as the visuals of the story tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to say about this scene, or just this is the last time we'll see the vineyard?
No. Yeah, and like I said, it's like that's the thing. It's like, man, Picard did this for 14 years in exile.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
All right, so we go over to Soji analyzing Ramda's Romulan tarot, essentially,
mm-hmm.
and then speaking to her in her native tongue. I assume this is the first time that Ramda has spoken to anyone, because Hugh seems pretty taken aback when she does.
Yeah. Like she has good days and bad days, but some of these mm-hmm. Romulans are essentially drawing in crayon on the walls.
Yeah.
So
what does a bad day look like?
They're disordered.
Mm-hmm. And then there's an attack on Chateau Picard. They manage to fight off the attackers, and then Jurati shows up saying that Commander O asked her what she wanted with Picard. And she told her almost everything, except that she was going with him. They begin interrogating one of the Romulan attackers. And there are sort of two interrogations intercut, which we'll get to here in a second.
Yeah.
And I'll take them one at a time, but they're happening at the same time.
Okay.
I was shocked to see so many Romulan disruptors stashed in Picard's house. Does he know about those Romulan disruptors?
I was about to ask, and I think there might be phaser pistols, like, because why would he? But maybe they're the Tal Shiar.
Exactly, yeah.
So, is this something that Chateau Picard's always had? Is this kind of like... like a Green Hornet situation where his Romulan attendants kind of like randomly attack him and like drill for this kind of stuff. Or when I think is that Laris was just being prepared. Like mm-hmm. when there's the attempt on Picard's life, she's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to start duct taping disruptors in every flat inverted surface in the house.
Okay, and I think it's a new thing.
Yeah, because like I don't buy that Picard is just the Chateau Picard just bristling with weapons. Like he's like a retired Kill Bill, you know.
I mean, they are former
Deadly Viper Squad member. He's just got knives and
Romulan military.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like she was a Tal Shiar agent, yeah. and the guy Zabin was the son of a Tal Shiar recruiter. So they're like I said, this works for me because. I understand that these Romulans are essentially retired James Bond types themselves.
Yeah.
And Picard, like, I like how he still is like this kind of like somewhat helpless old man, but he can still shoot a phaser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. You know something I didn't like?
He can still take being thrown across the room onto his desk.
Do you know what I don't like? I don't like someone swinging a wine bottle against a person with a space helmet and that person instantly crumpling to the ground.
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Like... The Mighty Thor swings a hammer at a guy in a helmet, fine. That guy's going down. But just a regular middle-aged Romulan swinging a bottle of wine, this guy's wearing a helmet. If you don't want me to bitch about this, have the guy not wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
Have the guy hit him with a fucking brick, you know, like a baseball bat or something. But, like, come on.
Yeah. Something with enough force to just knock him off balance.
It's the only thing in the otherwise really good action scene. Like I really like. There's some weight to this. Like when they throw Laris against the window and it like shatters. Like that's like really.
Yeah, it's shot from inside the cabinet. It's pretty cool.
Really cool. Yeah, that was a really cool action scene. But like, it's an unforced error with the wine bottle against helmet. Come on.
Yeah.
It's like little Ewok versus stormtroopers going on here.
You know what I'm disappointed in? Didn't get to see number one come after some of these Romulans.
What the hell?
Where's number one in this whole thing?
Some John Wick 3? Some number one going for some nuts? Some Romulan nut sacks?
Right.
Yeah, that would have been
Romulans
awesome.
Do Romulans have nut sacks?
But yes, but they're in the belly button position.
Mm. They're on their shoulders. That explains.
They're really being cautious with their gonads. And who wouldn't? It's imperative to the species survival.
For sure. All right. So, like I said, two interrogations intercut here. One where Soji's interrogating Ramda, the formerly assimilated Romulan, and one where Picard is interrogating one of his Romulan attackers.
I thought this was really cool.
Yeah, it's a nice way to cut back and forth. And them both arriving on the conclusion that Soji is the destroyer.
Yeah.
There's a nice symmetry there.
Yeah, yeah. Old Star Trek never did this shit.
No.
So this is a very, very modern technique, and I thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to say about these scenes beyond just she's the destroyer?
No, I mean, I like how they, with the, it's interesting because Ramda's like saying that she, I don't know, it's like Soji's trying to get in good with her and Ramda keeps on saying things like, no, this isn't fortune telling, sweetie. This is the news. Mm-hmm. And Soji's like, oh, you mean a shared narrative network or shared narrative framework that's
deep archetypes.
Archetypes that's like as relevant as the news. And Sam's like, or Ramda's like, no, I'm playing Romulan tarot cards. And I'm talking about, like, I met you tomorrow, but we've never met. That's why I said tomorrow. Like, she comes across as, like, really stupid, which I didn't enjoy. And the only reason the interview progresses is that she started having hidden knowledge that she shouldn't have. Been able to know, which is that's kind of a cool plot
about
point.
Her assimilation, yeah.
But yeah, it's like I don't know why they made her. I don't know. I don't know why they made her seem so obtuse. Mm-hmm. Because I want to buy her as a very smart, like if she's made from data stuff, then I'm going to assume that she's very analytically quick and smart and able to put things together. Mm-hmm. Instead of like intentionally twisting the words of someone to make them fit. I don't know. It is a weird scene, but. Otherwise, yeah, I liked it. What do you think she's going for with this news business.
I think you spelled it out pretty well. I'm interested to see where it goes and if it becomes something more than just not Romulan mythology.
Mm-hmm. It could be. Like I said, we'll there's like, I kind of like the Scooby-Doo nature of Star Trek. Like, you know, when Picard goes to a planet that's ran by a devil woman, and it turns out it's just a lady with a replicator and transporter technology. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the pulling the mask off. And so, like, you know, maybe, you know, Romulans do weird things. They use black holes for their ship reactors, mm-hmm. and the Borg travel through time. So it would be interesting if she saw a glimpse of the future through some sort of subspace gravitational lens fuckery.
Or just the collective, like the knowledge that she gained from being part of a collective has changed her perspective on things.
Or there's also like some of the religions of the Federation seem to have a little bit of science behind them, like the Bajoran prophets were aliens existed in a wormhole. So they were supernatural until people discovered them, and but there's something like spiritual to that. So it could be any of those things, and it'll be interesting to see which one they decide to go with, what flavor.
So, let me ask you this. During the Picard interrogation, the Romulans talking a mess about, you'll never find her before we do. What the fuck is he talking about? They found her. Narek's sleeping with her.
Yes.
Rizzo has gone to the artifact to confirm that they're on track to convert her or whatever, or get some info from her. They know where the fuck she is. Mm-hmm. Is this a different faction of Romulans?
I don't know, because a lot of that stuff to me doesn't make sense, because as Rizzo's saying, oh, this blunder, this Earth blunder, this ill-advised Earth blunder that we did, and we would never do that again. Meanwhile, they're doing it again. Mm-hmm. They're assaulting the home of a decorated Starfleet admiral.
Formerly.
How can this not be even a bigger clusterfuck for them?
Yeah,
like they fucked up the first assault, and then they go back with the cover up assault. They fuck it up again. I wonder if there aren't more than one faction fighting.
Yeah, it really seems like at this point that Rizzo and Narek are working higher up than maybe these other Romulans are. Black suited Romulans.
Yeah, I don't know, because you're right. It's like, yeah, they already know her. They've got her.
Yeah,
it's just about, I guess there's a. So did he misspeak? Because it seems like the difference that they would have if they're on the same team is the subtle approach versus the snatch and grab and pull the stuff out of their brain approach.
I mean, I'm certain. I can't imagine that in a work of fiction that's written beforehand that he would misspeak. Here on a podcast, we can misspeak. We don't write this stuff.
But maybe he's not told. He's just a grunt. He doesn't know.
It could be, yeah.
Because that would have to also be a super secret thing, right? Like, maybe you don't have your grunt level people knowing that, oh, actually, we're sleeping with the destroyer to get information out of.
Yeah, and that one of our agents is deep inside the surveillance, intelligence Starfleet organization.
Yeah,
like,
because
they probably don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the poison pill that he bites, which is fucking wild shit, man.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Good thing nothing got on our friend Zabden or whatever his name is, because he just turns into green goo.
Yep.
That's a violent, violent poison that they use.
Yeah, it's like a Romulan disruptor, except liquid.
Every time I see like these poison teeth used, I always wonder, it's like, what happens if they eat an olive and they don't know it's got an olive pit in it, but it's like just bite crunches down on that, or a piece of a tough gristle or bone.
Mm-hmm.
Like that happens like maybe once a year to me, and it'd be fatal in this case.
It takes just like an exceptionally large speed bump a little too fast.
Yeah, you trip and fall and your like teeth click together, boom, done.
Yeah.
Does this happen?
Those are the risks you take.
Fancy cocktail party. Yeah, like I was at a fancy party this weekend, a birthday party, and they had olives out, and I bit down and pitted olive. If I'm a Tal Shiar agent, I just dissolve into green goo at that party. Does that happen? Does that happen? Their Romulan Christmas parties are insane.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not a Romulan Christmas party until somebody dies.
Yeah, that's when they
violently.
Ends. Yeah, they start drinking Romulan ale, and it ends when someone dissolves into green goo.
It's like a Dothraki wedding. Okay, Soji calls her mom to ask if Dodge is okay. She says yes, and then Soji passes out. When she wakes, Narek comes to see if she's all right, and she tells him she didn't know any of the things she knew when she was talking to Ramda. How could she possibly know them? Narek tells her he may be falling in love with her, and I don't know.
Is that just an act, Jim?
That doesn't seem very subtle to me, Narek. Like, he's got this long con going, and second date whispers, I think I'm falling in love with you.
Yeah. Although they do play the Soji as just, like, so naive, like,
yeah,
and very young, and, you know, her deep cover story is that she's just a young girl, you know. She is. It is.
Yeah,
she's like
story.
A she's like a 23-year-old computer genius, mm-hmm. and she wants to believe that a hot Romulan with normal sized shoulders could fall in love with her.
With no nutsack.
No nutsack.
No
right.
nutsacks whatsoever.
Makes him non-threatening.
Yeah. All right, then Lieutenant Rizzo is now on the ship. She's looking like a Romulan again, and she asks what info he got. He says nothing. And she sends him back out to continue doing his nothing plan.
So why are we going to see her go back to Starfleet? Because, like, look, I don't care how deeply embedded you are in the Starfleet operations. It's a pretty foolish risk to go and visit your brother just so you can smell the sex on him and get your ears undone and then go, like, aren't there records? Like, she's physically traversing the space. Like, I thought it was crazy risky to do a subspace real-time communication. But, like, what? Is she just done on Earth and she's going to be a Romulan now? Because going back and forth is going to be a very...
And no one's going to ask where Lieutenant Rizzo is?
Right. Is her name Rizzo?
That's a good question. Is her Romulan name Rizzo?
She's still credited to Rizzo. They never used her name. Like, it's like, I don't know. Rizzo's a super Romulan name. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of questions that I don't think we're going to get answers to.
Right.
So strap in for that.
Right.
And then finally, Jurati tells Picard that she's going on the mission with him and makes her case for why she wants to go and why he needs her. And they beam over to Rio's ship where they find Rafi waiting for him. And she says she found Bruce Maddox on Free Cloud and she's hitching a ride there. And boom, we have our crew.
And she's not going to tell anybody why she's going there.
Nope.
She's going there to become a snake leaf burnout. That seems like it to me.
Yeah, I mean, she's clearly going there to investigate more Romulan shit, right?
Really?
It seems like it.
Why independently from Picard's mission, though? I thought she was just going to go there to, like...
Because she's angry at Picard?
But I guess, like, why wouldn't she just go to, you know, Free Cloud if she wanted to? Could she not afford to? Like, that's another thing. Like, she says she's living in a hovel, but she's well-fed. She's got plenty of snake leaf. She's got plenty of Chateau juice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her house looked... I mean, she's living in a fucking Monument Valley. Is this how a poor person on Earth lives? Because sign me up for that shit. Can she not afford a ticket to Free Cloud?
Yeah,
Captain Rios claims that he's very expensive. What does that mean?
Dude, I don't know. Money makes no sense in Star Trek.
Yeah.
In the Federation.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to tell you on the economic side of this thing.
Yeah.
So we get a moment with Picard and with old Star Trek here where... They're about to take off. And everybody looks to Picard, apparently knowing like intimate details about the bridge workings of the old Enterprise.
I think that makes sense.
Are there like a lot of holo recordings or something of the bridge?
I'm thinking
with him
about
going
like post-World War II, like how much people knew about like Patton and Eisenhower and some famous phrases of them, like, you know, and how much, I think, you know, how like Stormin Norman Schwarzkopf and, and like sometimes these guys get to be larger in life and they get some, especially a guy, like if you think about Picard and all this crazy shit the Enterprise got up to, like... Which is more bonkers? The idea that that's just an average Starfleet captain or like they just live this crazy fucking life where every week the thing's getting taken over by an interdimensional entity or they're solving peace between the Klingon Civil War or they're saving some world from black hole destruction.
He's like, a hero of legend for sure.
Yeah. So I think that like the like affectations like engage might, especially like these are all Starfleet officers for the most part, too.
Yeah, Rafi and Rios.
That might like read his book, like you know, and Rios even says, "I read one of your books." Like, yeah, I think so. And what sold it for me, and when I started like Rafi, despite the jail shit, is like she kind of slightly rolls her eyes at the engage because I'm like, yeah, that's a big moment for us.
Is it? I wish it were bigger. I wish there was more lead up to this because it felt like it just sort of. Well, this is the first time Picard's going to be at the command of a starship. We need to have him do the thing that he does because that's what he would do. But also, they didn't really build up emotionally to this. It was just kind of out of nowhere.
It might have been cringy if they did me. Build up. Like I said, I liked.
But
the
it could
fact.
Have also been awesome.
I liked that it was a moment to like half of the people, and that like the person that knows him best and like the sickest, the most sick of his shit is kind of rolling their eyes. Mm. That I think was the right. And I also think that Picard's going to say engage a bunch this season. So
oh yeah, he will.
Yeah, and I don't know what it would look like to build it up more and how I'd like, but I did like her rolling her eyes. I did like that.
Yeah. And you get some of the Star Trek TNG theme mm-hmm. in there, which is nice. You know, if you're going to go for the engage moment, I feel like that's a perfect musical cue for it.
Got to engage the music, yeah. Got to get that engaged.
And that's it. That's it for the episode.
One quick thing before we move on to feedback. Where are you at with Dr. Agnes Girardi? Is she a witting or unwitting mole inside the Picard operation? Because there's no fucking way the Commodore O went with her giant ears and sunglasses and did not at least put a bug on her or some kind of recording device or something. And it could be that she's just plain old compromised.
Yeah, it could be. I sort of don't think of her as a good liar. Like, she says it, and maybe that's just the subterfuge, right? Is that she's a great liar, and saying, oh, I'm such a terrible liar is part of that ruse.
But her coming,
I don't think so.
Her coming in to kill that Romulan at the very last moment at such an amazing amount of timing, that screams like either, again, oh, grease the wheels to get her there, or is it possible she's been replaced? Like with
a synthetic Girardi?
Well, then I was like, okay, are the Romulans using synthetics? Or I guess O's not a Romulan. But like, we've also seen like there's huge cosmetic surgery going on here.
Yeah.
Could she be like some kind of Romulan that they've blondified and round eared? And
I don't think so, couldn't tell you
but
why.
But also, you've seen like Geordi's been kidnapped and they strap some shit to him and he screams for half an episode and then he goes back to the Enterprise and he's like a Romulan double agent. Like, there's a lot of Romulans do shit. They're the spy people. I just think there's going to be a scene where she has to break her Romulan conditioning, or like they're going to find, because they also make it a big deal where Rafi's like, seriously, you invited a strange lady on the ship and you didn't even let me do a cursory security clearance?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to find out she's got some kind of bone implant that's relaying it. Like, that's how the O is going to keep track of everything.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I just don't know how much Girardi is in on it, like either wittingly or unwittingly. But it's definitely watch that, because there is... O didn't let her go with just a lecture and a shake of her wobbly ears.
Right.
There's more to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have some subspace communications. Speaking of those subspace communications, you got your snake leaf handy? All right. If you'd like to join our intergalactic smoke sesh here, snake sesh, you can send it to Picard at baldmove.com. Starting off, it's Josh. Josh says, hey, it's that guy, character actor David Paymer, as much as the next guy. But how great would it have been if they brought back Diana Mulder, i.e. Dr. Catherine Pulaski, for that scene with Picard's diagnosis?
No, nobody likes Pulaski. She's clearly an inferior Beverly.
Yeah, I'm thinking Gates McFadden, but Pulaski would have been interesting too. Is Diana Mulder still alive?
That's a good question.
Because she was in the original Star Trek.
Yeah, she was pretty old in TNG.
Yeah, she's still alive. She's only 81 years old now. So I guess they could have gotten her back.
Only. Oof.
I don't know. Maybe she's not acting anymore. But I thought
they would have had to do some CG work on her, probably.
Well, like what they did at Brent Spiner.
Yeah, well, that was the thing that surprised me. In those scenes with Picard and Rafi, they didn't do any work on them, it seems, to make them look much younger.
Yeah.
And it really was sort of jarring.
Yeah.
14 years is a long time.
Yeah.
Visually on a person.
Yeah, I agree. I had the same problem. I just watched Little Women over this weekend, and there's like a span of like 7 or 8 years, and they don't, like, the some of the Little Women go from like 13 to 20. And, like, they don't do anything to differentiate that, except for maybe some clothing and hair. And I'm like, you know, but yeah, I think it works. I don't know why they didn't get somebody better. Probably budget and willingness. Like, getting some Fadden might have just been like, you know, fuck you. I go to 3 of these goddamn cons, you know, I'm going to start going to more. And
all
that's,
right,
that's
well, stop
fine.
Doing one of the cons and do the show then, because we would love to see her back.
But I don't know. He opines that that way, if they're saving Crusher for a big moment, they could still preserve it while giving us an old familiar face. I agree. Yeah. I agree. They could have gone a bunch of different directions. They could have gotten Bashir, you know, because like maybe he, like there's a lot of different medical people that we've known and loved in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone already brought this up, but Disco has given us at least two F-bombs before now, as you might have expected. Oh, yeah. So, all right. This wasn't the first. It was my first F-bomb on Trek.
Nice. I didn't even notice it, so whatever.
Yeah. Josh opines, I also missed the Elkar system. I get that viewers see transparent holograms and think advanced technology, but aren't Elkars, you know, just easier to read?
I love Elkars. I'm not going to talk about their efficacy because I don't fucking know, but goddamn, they're so cool looking. They're iconic.
I think they're very cool looking, and they scream future to me. And it's cool that also in the 21st century we interface with a lot of our society, with a lot of our world through Elkars style context sensitive menuing.
And Google Canvas is essentially just Elkars with like pastel colorings.
Yeah, I mean, all touch screens are like, you know, just you have universal gestures to open. Like it's the same screen. I mean, it's revolutionary touch screen things. I don't know that you want them on the fire phasers button. You don't want to get like reverse to ship and the fire photon torpedoes button confused, but you know, Elkars is cool, and the transparent hologram. It just seems like all that stuff would be way harder to use than the equivalent. Either like switches are easier to use than Elkars, and Elkars are easier to use. The vague gestures you make in the sky with a halo around your fingers. Like, I don't know how that works, but it does read the future. Mm. Also finds it kind of neat that we got a retcon explaining why we've got both ridged and unridged Romulans. Seems that Romulans with the ridges, I feel like I should be rolling my R's with that. Romulans have, but I can't. I can't. I was born without the tongue rolling gene. Without ridges might be Northerners. Referring to the entire hemisphere, I suppose, explains why Spock had any hope of blending in on Romulus back in the day.
I missed this. There was info.
Yeah, so like the big mook that they had captured and interrogating had the same ridge that Zomdin or whatever his name is, and that Laris does not. And he says, this is hopeless. She goes, yes, it is, because he's a stubborn Northerner and just like you, and slaps his nose ridge. Huh. So they're implying that there's subtle racial differences between the different, which.
Gotcha.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like, it is kind of bizarre that, like, all Klingons look like Klingons, you know?
Yeah. With a population that large.
Yeah. And I think they're starting to go away with that. Like, you know, you now see, like, there's different skin colors of Vulcans and Romulans and even Klingons. So, yeah, that's cool. Charlie sends us in a message. Although the series has been pretty good thus far, I still haven't completely scratched my nostalgic Star Trek itch.
Yeah.
Know what you mean, Charlie. There's something about that old style, steady cam, lack of explosion Star Trek that I miss. Then enters the Orville. I was wondering if you guys had ever seen it and what you think of it. I find Seth MacFarlane has been able to mock / recreate that old style so perfectly that it scratches the Star Trek itch for me. Everything from the pre-opening theme scenes to camera work to modern problems the show discusses, it just feels very much like Star Trek. Because it's also comedy, it also gets to talk about certain things Star Trek of old could never, like when Bortus' husband catches him using the holodeck for porn while becoming less and less intimate in their relationship.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Let's give credit where credit's due. Barclay did this ages ago.
That's true. But he wasn't in a real couple, so you didn't have his girlfriend being like, why isn't he sexually interested in me anymore?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this. I've heard a lot of good things. Galaxy Quest is one of the better Star Trek movies, if you overlook the fact that it's satire. So it doesn't surprise me that it's very good. I just haven't time to see it. It came out
one of these days. I'll go binge watch it.
Yeah. But first, we have Picard. Mm-hmm. Next up, David. As a huge TNG fan growing up, I was thrilled to hear about Patrick Stewart's return, but also, particularly after seeing where Luke Skywalker went in The Last Jedi, hesitant to see where we'd find the character. The first episode in particular really allayed those fears. I love the story, and Patrick Stewart still brings it. A serialized storytelling puzzle box set up as though both a blessing and a curse. It's exciting to see where all this leads, but the complete abandonment of the episodic format is going to cripple its rewatchability, an asset to Trek that has allowed it to gain and maintain its popularity. Hmm. That's a good point. Like, when I went back to start watching Star Trek Next Generation, I just jumped in season 3, and my wife, who had never seen Star Trek before, like within a couple episodes, she was able to get like all the jokes. And because it's like, you know, again, Riker's the guy who likes to fuck.
Uh-huh.
Data's the robot that wishes to be. You got his entire arc in a single sentence. Geordi is the blind guy who's hapless with women, completely hapless with women. Crusher's the nerd that gets bullied by everyone on the Enterprise. Like it's easy. It's easy. There's no complex backstory.
Hmm.
Like there is, like if you go over whole seasons, but it's easy to enjoy. And these puzzle box things, it's not, no one's going to drop in and like, you know, some random episode of Picard. I doubt it anyway.
Yeah. I miss that too. I think the format of old TNG episodes was more conducive to a broader range of discussions about society and about humanity. And I'm sad to see that go. I think this is a pretty good show. I think Patrick Stewart is mostly still able to bring it as a very old man. There are a couple of moments in this where I'm like, yes, I see the flash of old Picard in him. Like when he's talking to Rios and he's looking around and saying, this is Starfleet, you're Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got those moments which really bring back the nostalgia for me.
Here's a pitch.
But it's different.
Here's a pitch. Starfleet's and the Federation has a sickness in it right now.
Okay.
Picard's going to fix it over the next 3 or 4 seasons. And then the Federation and Starfleet, after they uncover all this, you know, skull fuckery within their institutions, are going to get go on a back to basics campaign. They're going to have an Enterprise F.
Exploration.
And they're going to have a new, like, yeah, just a brand new crew. And it's going to go back to, like, we're going to start examining 21st century problems and societal conundrums through the lens of Star Trek. And it's going to be the kickoff to the new 25th century. It's going to be a new campaign of exploration. Doesn't that feel right?
I seriously doubt that's going to happen.
But why?
It could be cool.
Why?
Because television just doesn't work that way anymore.
I just don't know. If people are this nostalgic about like the Orville.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Galaxy Quest. Like, I mean, everyone says that that's like kitschy and, you know, kind of like hokey. But like, I don't know. Star Trek was that way because it was mostly poorly written and it had, you know,
the effects were kind of dodgy. Had no budget. Like
the effects and makeup, like sometimes actually, if you go back and look at Star Trek Next Generation, especially on Netflix or something, it's got like the actual like gorgeous, you know, film transfers and it's on high def. It's amazing what they did with some of those sets and some of the locations and stuff. And it's also amazing what a cheap piece of wooden shit a lot of those props are, too. Like some of those Veron T disruptors are just like a 2x4 sanded with some erector set shit on it, man. Mm-hmm. But like I think a big budget, optimistic problem du jour kind of thing would work nowadays. Maybe I'm wrong.
I would like it. I just don't think enough of the public would like it.
I need a company willing to risk $10 million an episode on my crazy idea. All right?
That's Talk what to I HBO. Need. They might do it. Who knows?
Oh, man. What would the rights look like?
They would be terrible.
Yeah. To try to get that on HBO or something.
Be a nightmare.
So that's it. That's our episode. That's our episodic conversation about Star Trek Picard this week. We'll be back next week for another thrilling interstellar edition of Picard where we'll get to find out. I don't know. I'm curious to see how big Comoro's ears get. That's you keep your puzzle box. I want to see. I'm keeping her on my eye on this. I got ear watch going on.
I mean, is she going to have to upgrade her office eventually?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty big office.
You're right.
But the desk at least, right? You got to keep everything in proportion.
You're right.
Otherwise,
you're
the ears stand out.
Yeah, the desk has to keep getting bigger.
Right.
She's going to look like Baby Yoda by the end of this and are just huddled in with this giant coffee mug in front of her.
Uh-huh.
I'm excited for that. We'll see where it goes next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.